This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I am Teresa Mitchell, and I'm here to help you pierce the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and take an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Pardon me while I fumble with the mic. Oh my, how unprofessional. How unprofessional. Okay, I'm all fumbled now. That's good. Maybe. Hi there. Okay. You just never know what's going to happen next, do you? Well, here we are in Portland, where there are 7 hotels, 12 mixed-use, 13 offices, 18 residential, and 2 retail large buildings going up, or in other words, at least 52 major construction sites in the Portland metro area right now. I just thought you might want to know that. It has to do with traffic, of course. It has to do with employment. It has to do with the slump that's going to hit when all those buildings are built and the vacancies start happening. We're in a boom. Want to go through some headlines as well. Chelsea Manning's being held incommunicado after rumors of a suicide attempt. There are more details. Her lawyers tried to contact her, and they now think that they were lied to, that she was unavailable or that the line wasn't working. So it's not clear what's happening to Chelsea Manning, who, of course, is the person who exposed via WikiLeaks the brutality of a U.S. helicopter attack and other details in the Iraq War, and is now serving a 30-year sentence in Army Prison Leavenworth. And there's been a constant stream of attacks on her person, starting with before she was convicted. And it's been a pretty nasty experience for her, I should think. Imperialism is what that's about. Imperialism starts at home. Today, we have videos of another pair of bloody executions by terrorists. The terrorists tackle and kill a man for no reason other than to spread terror, in this case, the profitable terror of white men in this country. The terror says that no matter what you do, we, the whites, can kill you, the non-white, whatever that means, in broad daylight. So thank us for whatever work or hustle you can get, and never question our rule. See what happens to those who are not deferential and grateful. That's how to talk white, see? See what happens to a kid just playing in a park? That could be you. This is why I say, and it doesn't matter how much you obey the rules. You know, there's going to be some of you. We're going to take some of you down just on general principle. This is why I say whiteness must be destroyed. I want to live in a nation where whiteness is acknowledged as a false and arbitrary status cue, where my pale skin and light hair mean only that I am the offspring principally of Irish, Germans, others, Jews. I want to start generations of reparation and atonement. At the same time, I want white supremacy to be seen and acknowledged so it can be broken. So what is whiteness? Whiteness is a status. It's bogus. At the same time, got to use that word white. Got to acknowledge whiteness. Got to acknowledge white supremacy. White supremacy is happening. Is whiteness really real? No, it's evil. Whiteness is an evil. So am I white? Yeah, within this system, I get those privileges. Absolutely. Enjoy them. I like it. Oh, yes, I do. I like driving down the road and not being stopped. I like when I get stopped for a ticket and I'm speeding, I don't get searched. That's very nice. You get used to it. As a matter of fact, white people are just shocked out of their minds they get searched, because it doesn't happen much. You have to look pretty poor. So whiteness and class are pretty well connected. It's complicated, but there is that basis of the whole idea of what's white. Like I said, I'm Irish. Maybe you're Slavic if you consider yourself white. Maybe you're Slavic and of African descent, but you're dark enough you're considered black. See what I mean? It's a status. Death to whiteness. Down with whiteness. Destroy whiteness. You with me on that? I invite you to continue the calls from the previous show. Joanne did a great job, as usual. And it was a very interesting show, and I I had my little agenda. It was going to be mostly, it was going to be headlines, and then global warming turned into fumbling with the mic, and then headlines, I guess. But it's time. This is the time. We need to talk about destroying whiteness. So if you want to talk about that, 503-231-8187. Now, the New York Times has graciously provided us with an update of the latest in imperialism, and I mean that in the usual sense, of foreign attacks. They don't like to use that word, the I word, and they don't use it. So I will occasionally interrupt this report, which is drawn from part of the New York Times story, with relevance and truth. So starting with their Washington Dateline, New York Times says, partially lifting the secrecy that has cloaked one of the United States' most contentious tactics for fighting terrorists, the Obama administration on Friday said that it believed that airstrikes it has conducted outside conventional war zones like Afghanistan have killed 64 to 116 civilian bystanders and about 2,500 members of terrorist groups. Marta could not hear her boy calling for help because the drone strike had deafened her, and in any event, she was engaged in finding her 9-year-old daughter's missing leg. No one could find the bride at all. After a while, Marta fell senseless from blood loss. The official death count is far lower than estimates compiled by independent organizations that try to track down what the government calls targeted killings, and human rights groups express doubts about the reliability of the government's numbers. Most of the strikes have been carried out by drones in chaotic places like Libya, tribal Pakistan, Somalia, and Yemen, though a small number have been involved, have involved traditional aircraft or cruise missiles. The wool merchant, a grandfather, stared at the place where his hand used to be. The odor of shredded liver and intestines forced him to retch. At the same time, President Obama issued an executive order making civilian protection a priority and requiring the government in the future to disclose the number of civilian deaths each year. The order, which could be canceled or altered by a future president, tries to commit his successors to greater openness than he has achieved in his first 7 years in office. For Mr. Obama, the drone program is personal, a defining feature of his presidency. As he expanded the use of drones far beyond what President George W. Bush had begun, he took a direct role in approving some strikes, including the deliberate killing of an American, and in setting up rules to govern them. The groom lay in a widening pool of blood. After a while, his ruptured inferior vena cava stopped spurting. He convulsed as if to throw himself off the ground and was still. In a seeming acknowledgement that the long-anticipated disclosure would be greeted with skepticism by critics of the drone program, the administration issued the numbers on a Friday afternoon before a holiday weekend. The use of a range of estimated civilian deaths underscored the fact that the government often does not know for sure the affiliations of those killed. They're guessing, too, said Bill Ruggio, editor of the Long War Journal at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, who has tracked civilian deaths for more than a decade. Theirs may be a little more educated than my guesses, but they cannot be completely accurate, end quote. Farage used his 12-year-old muscles as best he could to put the pieces of people back together. Sometimes he was not sure if he had gotten the right limbs to the right torsos. The heads could be a problem, too, with the faces missing. Patiently, he reassembled the dead, never stopping in his searching until he was pulled away from the wedding party. He has not spoken a word since. The disclosure about civilian deaths and the executive order, the subject of months of bureaucratic deliberations, carried broader significance, issued about 7 months before Obama leaves office. The order further institutionalized and normalized airstrikes outside conventional war zones as a routine part of 21st century national security party. The order declares that, quote, civilian casualties are a tragic and sometimes unavoidable consequence of the use of force in situations of armed conflict or the exercise of a state's inherent right of self-defense, end quote, and lays out the best practices necessary to reduce their likelihood and to take appropriate steps when they occur. The mullah, laying on the mosque floor in agony from a broken and pierced hip bone, stared fixedly at a single detached finger. It had bright pink nail polish. Well, now I'll turn to antiwar.com, an article by Chris Woods. This is part of it. And if you'd like to read the whole thing, antiwar.com. 2014 study by legal charity Reprieve suggests the U.S. drone strikes in Yemen and Pakistan had killed as many as 1,147 unknown people and failed attempts to kill 41 named targets. Now, speaking for myself, that's a tad different, isn't it? Continuing with the article, it's also clear the CIA has been using a very different rule book in an effort to lower civilian deaths in Afghanistan. International airstrikes on buildings in urban locations were mostly banned from 2008. In Pakistan, more than 60% of CIA strikes have targeted domestic buildings or militant compounds, as they say, according to Bureau research. Then there have been the more shocking tactics employed by the CIA. There was a deliberate targeting of funerals and rescuers, again first revealed by the Bureau, and the widespread use of so-called signature strikes during the Obama years, the targeting of suspects based not on their known identities, but on their behavioral patterns. In the most notorious such incident, at least 35 civilians died when the CIA targeted a tribal meeting in 2011, an action which significantly damaged U.S.-Pakistani relations. None of those deaths appear to have been included in the White House's casualty estimates. Missing, too, are the 41 civilians, including 22 children, slain in a JSOC cruise missile strike on Yemen in 2009. These two events alone indicate more civilian deaths than all of those now being admitted across 7 years. So you can find the rest of that article in antiwar.com. Number to call with your comments, questions, imperialism at home, imperialism abroad, apartheid at home, if you want to call it that, imperialism abroad, 503-231-8187. Dateline Mexico City from Radio Havana, Cuba. Public school teachers in Mexico City carried out their first day of an indefinite strike on Tuesday. The protest had been announced earlier by leaders of the dissident CNTE Teachers Union as a way of opposing education reforms imposed by President Enrique Peña Nieto. The striking teachers' mega march was held in central Mexico City and was joined by some parents and by peers from the southern states of Oaxaca, Chiapas, and Guerrero. In an official statement, labor organizers called on teachers to also join in road blockades, which protesters have been staging for months, to demand that the government discuss the reforms. However, the government of Peña Nieto has shown little openness to dialogue, and instead teachers have been repressed by security forces. The government violence escalated to fatal levels in Oaxaca, where federal and local police repression claimed the lives of at least 8 people and left dozens injured, with many arrested during the demonstrations. Protests began in 2013 when Peña Nieto introduced a total of 11 free market structural reforms early in his mandate, with those on the education being first on the list. And of course, this is continuing, speaking for myself, this is continuing in the protest tradition. And there's been a great deal of violence against teachers, including the Ayotzinapa 43. Also from Radio Havana, the Argentine government said it will maintain its sovereignty demand over the Malvinas Islands that are currently occupied by the UK, even if the country leaves the EU. With or without Brexit, the Malvinas claim will never change. That's a quote from Argentine President Mauricio Macri during a press conference in Brussels. Argentina's claim is held throughout time, and we hope that someday we can sit around a table and discuss the issue in depth, he said. This claim didn't stop Macri from meeting with the British Prime Minister David Cameron on two separate occasions during the World Economic Forum held in the Swiss city of Davos in January, and then in Washington, D.C. during the Nuclear Security Summit held in April. So that's Radio Havana, Cuba. Continuing with headlines, I encourage your calls and comments on white supremacy, on imperialism, on the topics I've brought up here. Al Jazeera says that Taiwan is preparing for the arrival of Nepartak, a massive typhoon that is expected to cause heavy rains and flooding. Typhoons are common in Taiwan. Category 5 typhoons, though, are not that usual. Since 1950, there have been 18 cyclones of this most violent category, and Super Typhoon Nepartak would be number 19. It is the first named storm of 2016 and is currently a Category 5, as defined by the Saffir-Simpson International Scale. Even though the major El Nino of last year has now collapsed, the Northwest Pacific typhoon season is having its second slowest start in nearly 70 years. That will be of no comfort to the inhabitants of Taiwan, who can't expect the onset of typhoon weather later today. Taichung and Hailin counties in eastern Taiwan are the first to be hit by Nepartak. They contain a long, low river valley, so flooding is likely. The forecast rainfall is expected to be at least 300 millimeters, which is 30 centimeters, which is, how much is that? 10 inches, I think. Current measurements by NASA suggest cloud tops of 17,000 meters or 56,000 feet, which means that thunderheads around the typhoon's eye are punching through the top of the Earth's atmosphere. Rainfall rates over the ocean could be as high as 190 millimeters per hour. That from Al Jazeera. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And you're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell from the University of Copenhagen. Future global warming will not only depend on the amount of emissions from human-made greenhouse gases, but it will also depend on the sensitivity of the climate system in response to feedback mechanisms. This is from ScienceDaily.com. By reconstructing past global warming and the carbon cycle on Earth 56 million years ago, researchers from the Niels Bohr Institute, among others, have used computer modeling to estimate the potential perspective for future global warming, which could be even warmer than previously thought. The results are published in the scientific journal Geophysical Research Letters. Global warming from greenhouse gas emissions depends not only on the size of the emissions, but also on the warming effect that the extra amount of gas has on the atmosphere. This effect, called climate sensitivity, is usually defined as the warming caused by the doubling of the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. Climate sensitivity depends on a number of properties of the Earth's climate system, such as the composition of clouds and cloud cover. Quoting Professor Gary Schaffer, the research shows that climate sensitivity was higher during the past global warm climate than in the current climate. This is bad news for humanity, as greater climate sensitivity from warming will further amplify the warming. The past tells about the future. The study was based on reconstructions and climate modeling of a period of global warming 56 million years ago. The period known as the Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum was triggered by massive releases of carbon into the atmosphere, and climate researchers have long identified it as a time that could in some ways be analogous to today's global warming. Reconstructions of past temperatures show that even before the PETM, the Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum, say that three times quickly, the Earth was about 10 degrees warmer than today, and then warmed an additional 5 degrees during the PETM. In addition, they combined data about minerals, isotopes, and the carbon cycle with climate models to estimate the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere, both before and during the period. From this, they could estimate the climate sensitivity, and the result was that where it was about 4.5 degrees centigrade before the PETM, the temperature rose about 5.1 degrees during the PETM. Climate sensitivity is currently around 3 degrees. And quoting the researchers, our results show that the amount of carbon that drove the PETM warming 56 million years ago was about the same amount as the current easily accessible fossil fuel reserves of about 4,000 billion tons. Or 4,000 gigatons, but the warming that would result from adding such large amounts of carbon to the climate system would be much greater today than during the PETM and could reach up to 10 degrees. This is partially due to the current atmosphere containing much less CO2, approximately 400 parts per million, compared to before the PETM, where the concentration was about 1,000, and partly because we emit carbon into the atmosphere at a much faster rate than during the PETM. If we then also take into account the fact that climate sensitivity increases with the temperature, it means that it is all the more urgent to limit global warming as soon as possible by reducing the human-made emissions of greenhouse gases. That's a quote of Professor Gary Schaffer, who conducted the study in collaboration with researchers from Purdue University, USA, the University of Chile, and the Technical University of Denmark. Time is 9:19. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. And I invite your calls and comments. This day, if you listen to Democracy Now!, well, it was rather hard, wasn't it, to listen to Democracy Now!? And I certainly found it difficult. And we have two of the horrific ongoing slaughters of black men by white police. And when I saw the killing, or the aftermath of the killing of his name escapes me just at the moment. The fellow who was shot in his car. Well, I thought, how many times I've seen or read something very similar in which a white person, is approached by a white officer, and he says, "Well, I have a carry permit," and he says, "Well, you'll have to give that up," and it's handed over. And that apparently was what was in process at that time. Of course, every situation is different, but, even if you obey the rules, even if you're just a kid playing with a toy gun in a playground, you're not safe. And this is why I say whiteness must be destroyed. Would you like to comment, or do you have questions on that? Please call 503-231-8187, and Thomas is on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
You know, something that really stuck in my craw early on in your reading there is those alleged figures of alleged civilian casualties. That's just from the drone strikes being so small. That's just a damn lie, isn't it?
Well, and it seems to be a tradition with the Pentagon, because I'm old enough to remember the wildly conflicting casualty figures coming in from Vietnam and the refusal of Kissinger, McNamara, Nixon et al. To even admit that they were bombing the crap out of Laos.
Yeah, well, you know, the more things change, the more things stay the same. And it's, you know, and I was thinking that in conjunction with the idea of, you know, overturning the whiteness, I'd say that, you know, I was thinking about the good old drone ranger himself, our lovely President Barack Obama, and coming to the end of his 8-year reign here, and I'm thinking, you know, he's done a good job. He's kind of done a great job for the status quo. I was thinking about what maybe how to encapsulate perhaps his what would characterize his, you know, his term as president, and I think the term would be the normalization of impunity, whether it's in banking or.
Ooh, I like that.
You know, and it's true. You know, in the normalization of impunity of the ruling class, you know, and its servants, be it the police or anyone else, people that the truth tellers, the people that reveal the crimes, go to jail. Everyone else gets a deferred sentence or an out-of-court settlement by the Justice Department, yada, yada, yada. So I would say as far as the question of whiteness, Barack Obama has been very, very careful never to forget. I would say that though he was America's first black president, that he was residing in the White House. And I have to wonder, you know, this thing about these people talking about these people that died. There are single drone strikes that are documented where the casualties are documented that approach the paltry number given by the administration. Single strikes. I mean, it's just, you know, it sounds almost trite to say that to talk about lies. But, you know, our president's a damn liar. And this is what you get when you have somebody who's obsequious. And I just wonder, if we could bring Malcolm X back just for a day to have him comment on the victory of having a black man in the presidential office that turns around and does absolutely nothing, virtually nothing.
I know it's bizarre, isn't it? But you know, it's complex because it's not nothing. It's not nothing to have a black president. That does have an effect, but it obviously, you know, does not end white supremacy, and it certainly doesn't end imperialism. And he is like Hillary Clinton. He is presented as an efficient administrator of imperialism, and he seems to come up with kinder, gentler imperialism. And
Well, he's a bottom. He's what the, you know, he's a bottom. He's a spineless worm. And you know, Hillary Clinton is a top. That's the only difference. They both, you know, Barack Obama ends up promulgating and supporting all of this ruthless neocon interventionism by default because he's such a spineless coward.
All right, S&M metaphors for imperialism. It kind of works, though, doesn't it?
Right. Well, it's Clinton. You know, Clinton is... she doesn't do it by default. She does it actively. Barack Obama does it because he's an obsequious crowd pleaser, and that's how he rose to power, by telling people what they want to hear. So yeah, so that out of the frying pan and into the fire. I mean, as far as the normalization of impunity, you know, that's why there's no prosecutions. You heard this thing talking about drone strikes and the illegal wars overseas. Think about this. I mean, we just had these toothless reading of this report in England about the lead up to the Iraq war that just basically chapter and verse, everything short of directly saying that Tony Blair and the people in power in the Labor Party were making the decisions in the run up to the Iraq war, basically, well, essentially are war criminals. And, you know, can you imagine anything like that happening, even to that degree?
Oh, and then the old refrain that they want to paste on just to make it carry a little better. They say, "Oh well, mistakes were made." Not a mistake. They knew what they were doing. They knew that people were dying, and they didn't care.
Yeah, a mistake is when you accidentally step on a bar of soap in a bathtub and you fall down and break your leg. You know, a mistake isn't when you have months and months and years of planning for strategies. You know,
No, that's called premeditation, and you're making a lot of sense, but I do have someone else waiting to on the line, so I'll go to that next call.
That's right. I'm fuming. Thanks.
Thanks for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. I'm talking about this profitable violence. It starts at home. We extract lower wages and reserve armies of the employed by intimidating portions of our population. We intimidate women. We intimidate people of color. We intimidate gays. And the result is lower wages. And that's intentional at some level. And I believe it's Tim next is on the air. Sonny, I'm sorry. Sonny is on the air.
Oh, hi. Hi. Hey, that last call was so good. I don't want it to end. I would like to continue to listen to you, too. I hope you will call in again, and we can listen to you, too.
Yeah, it was good. Normalization of impunity.
Oh, yeah, lots of good stuff in there, and always good stuff from you, too. And, you know, what we're busy at right now, sociologically, with all this crap that's going on, is the intimidation also of the white male. I mean, they're coming out of the closet with how nasty they really are. And the idea is to really make the white male into, like, understanding, uh-oh, this is bad stuff. And you know what? I'm not surprised because, hey, this is the legalized the pot. They got the pot legalized. And, you know, in the 60s, there was activism and there was the effort to tip over the country into something different. But in truth, I never, ever felt much of that stuff was genuine, maybe because I was more of the later punk generation. But I've always felt that there was a lot of phoniness about the ponytail people and their pot and all their revolution. And where the hell are they now that it's happening right in front of us?
Well, I'd say put your eyes on Democratic Convention because something's going to get stirred up there.
Well,
I am out of time. The music is running, and I thank you for your call.
Bye-bye.
And Pear is standing at the door, and he is ready, hell on wheels, to come in here and do his show. So you'll want to stay tuned for that at the top of the hour, I presume. Chris Andre and Air Cascadia here on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. In Cascadia, other frequencies elsewhere in Cascadia, and via KBOO.FM, where you can click the button and join up. KBOO.FM, in that manner, to all the ships at sea.